The next case is 07-1490 Barry R. Tenney versus General Electric Company. Mr. Mercer.
May it please the court, your honors. My name is Greg Mercer, and I represent Joanne O'Neill and General Electric. The issue in this case is, on a case with a fairly long fact pattern, is fairly straightforward. It's whether a claim that has been labeled one for intentional infliction of serious emotional distress, but relies primarily on acts that are assaults, is governed by a one-year or a four-year statute of limitations. The Court of Appeals recognized, or at least the majority of the Court of Appeals, recognized this court's prior holding in Doe versus First United Methodist Church, saying that, in fact, it is the one-year statute of limitation that applies. But in our case, the Court of Appeals engrafted a sexual gratification element onto that test. And even though the court found below that the primary acts giving rise to the claim were assaults, it held, at least the majority did, that because Joanne O'Neill's primary purpose was not sexual gratification, that somehow a longer statute of limitation should apply. This case involves the interpretation, obviously, of Ohio's statute of limitations statutes. 2305.111B is the one-year statute of limitations for assault and battery. The catch-all statute of limitations is 2305.09D, and in the key language it notes that it covers injury to the rights of the plaintiff not enumerated in a range of statutes that includes 2305.111B. In Doe and in other cases, this court has recognized that the label given to the claim is irrelevant. You look at the substance of the claim, and if the essence of the claim is one for assault, then we've got a one-year statute of limitation that applies. The two assaults identified by the Court of Appeals below took place between a little more than 1 and 4 years prior to the filing of the complaint. This case took place at a manufacturing plant in Warren, Ohio. It makes the glass lenses that go on headlights. They're basically concave discs. And in 1996, Mr. Tenney, the plaintiff, who is a unionized employee, he is openly gay, was working on an inspection line with a coworker named Diane Lissy. They had a stack of these lenses that were sitting there. The stack fell over, striking Mr. Tenney and cutting his penis. And I'll quote the language verbatim since it's relevant, I think, to the Court of Appeals analysis. When he accused Diane Lissy of doing it intentionally, she said, Barry, if and when I'm going to cut off your dick, I'm going to do it with a knife. That was an assault. That was the first incident. The second one, and more important one, relied upon by the Court of Appeals was in 1999. Joanne O'Neill was the one involved in this incident. Joanne O'Neill is, at the time, a 65-year-old grandmother. Barry Tenney was a plant worker in his mid-40s.
I want to just ask a question about the assault. Was that determined to be an actual assault or an accident with just a rude comment after, or is that issue still remain?
The issue was made, Your Honor. What happened was that Joanne O'Neill and Mr. Tenney had conversations in the past regarding his sexual orientation. She had made a number of comments, at least Mr. Tenney claims. She denies it, by the way, but for purposes of summary judgment, we'll take it as true. She made a number of comments that were insensitive as to the reasons for his sexual orientation. Mr. Tenney had filed grievances against her with the union. She is another hourly employee, although I don't believe she's in the union. And she was told not to do that. In the incident that the Court of Appeals found significant occurred afterward.
No, I'm sorry. I was going back to the first incident.
Sure.
Where the lens fell over. Was that determined to be a deliberate act by the coworker, or was it an accident followed by an insensitive comment? I couldn't quite determine, or maybe that's still an issue to be resolved.
And you ask a good question, because we had assumed all along that it was an accidental incident that took place. The only reason why I even mention it is because the Court of Appeals found it was significant. Since the claim is one for intentional infliction of serious emotional distress, I assume from the Court of Appeals decision that it was assuming that this was an intentional act. But even if you go by the statement that was made, that is in the nature of an assault. You are putting someone in threat of an imminent battery, so that would also be governed by a one-year statute of limitations. In the 1999 incident, Joanne O'Neill was alleged to have hugged Mr. Tenney, put her arms around him, pressed her body against him, her breasts, kissed him, saying, "I love you," and he described this as a full sexual encounter. Now, as I talked about, this really involves the settled law that this court decided at least twice, the most recently in Doe versus First United Methodist Church. Sadly, it was a case just like the one we argued a few minutes ago involving sexual molestation by someone affiliated with the school. In that case, it was a choir director that engaged in inappropriate sexual conduct with a student several hundred times over the course of years. And the question this court had to deal with is, was this an assault or was this some other tort, such as intentional infliction of emotional distress or negligence, that would be subject to a longer statute of limitations? And what the court said is you have to look at the essential character of what's being claimed. And in Doe, the essential character was for assault. On top of that, the court noted that there really was no reason to toll the statute of limitations. In the Doe case, obviously, he had been a minor when it started. He achieved majority and then sued sometime between 1 and 2 years afterward. And the court recognized, he knew what the act was, he knew who the assailant was, he knew he had been harmed by it, and those same things applied here. Mr. Tenney knew all of these things immediately after all those things occurred. Now, what the Court of Appeals did is they tried to get into Joanne O'Neill's intent, and her incident was the primary one that the Court of Appeals paid attention to.
Well, I think we understand, we've read the opinion, but the question I would pose to you at this point, Mr. Mercell, is that in Doe, this court stated that where the essential character of an alleged tort is an intentional offensive touching, the statute of limitations for assault and battery governs, even if the touching is pled as an act of negligence or intentional infliction of emotional distress. Now, if that is the law that we've indicated in Doe, is there anything else for us to write in this case? And have we clarified that law? And is this just error correction of the 11th District? And how do you find our opinion in connection with the application as it as it's applied in this instance?
Let me answer your question two ways. First of all, I think the law is clear in Doe versus First United Methodist Church, and it also goes with the Love versus City of Port Clinton case involving some police abuse,
yes,
and whether that one could be recharacterized as well. And the two cases, I think, stand for the same principle, and it's pretty clear from the two how it's to be applied. This case, I think, involved yet a different fact pattern and the same rule being applied. And the twist here was that the Court of Appeals had introduced this additional element trying to get into the intent of the person, whether their intent was to achieve sexual gratification or not, or whether it was to cause some level of emotional distress. In our view, is an assault is an assault. And so to answer your question, I think it is set forth in Doe. I think it needs to be clarified in light of the holding in this case where additional elements were grafted onto the test to make it clear that no, an assault is an assault. That's what the statute says, and that's how the rule should be applied.
So that's what you're asking for, is an application of that principle to this case.
Correct. Now, in this case, there was, I suppose, like a lot of cases, there were many issues below, and this is the one that has reached this court. But the Court of Appeals has made that pretty clear. As you point out, you read the decision. What the court found, particularly as to Joanne O'Neill, was none of the other conduct gave rise to this claim. Particularly as to her, it was this one incident which is plainly an assault under any standard. Then you've got the next one they mentioned in going through the remainder is the one involving Diane Lissy. And the remaining facts cited by the Court of Appeals are ones that the court had already held were not enough by themselves to establish this tort. So the straightforward application of Doe would make it clear that this claim was subject to a one-year statute of limitations. With the court's permission, I will reserve my remaining time for rebuttal unless there are further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mercell. Mr. Sobecki.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, in 1983, this court recognized the tort of intentional infliction of emotional distress, which has a 4-year statute of limitations. The appellee in this case, I am, on behalf of the appellee, I am not urging the court to overturn any of its previous decisions. In fact, I'm urging the court to follow its previous precedent in both the Yeager case, the 1983 case recognizing the tort, as well as the Doe versus First United Methodist Church case. The test enunciated in the Doe versus First United Methodist Church case was we're going to put aside what is pled in the complaint. The focus will be what's the nature of the case. And the Court of Appeals followed the Doe case in this instant case here. In fact, it cited the Doe. It did not overturn Doe in either directly or indirectly.
Really couldn't overturn Doe, could it?
No, sir.
Action of futility, I think, to try
maybe,
to overrule
maybe
one
the
of
11th
our
could, though.
But it seems to me they did add something to Doe, did they not?
I don't believe so. I do not accept the assertion, and I've read the opinion a number of times by the Court of Appeals. They looked at the general nature of the conduct, and they said this is not, although it has some physical abuse, the Court of Appeals clearly said this is a mental abuse case, not a physical abuse case. And thus, it's the tort of intentional infliction of emotional distress, not the tort of assault and battery. Also, looking back at this court's case in the Yeager versus Local Union 20 case, Your Honors, in that case, the fact pattern touched on other torts, although the court recognized it in its final decision as an intentional infliction of emotional distress case. There was elements there of threats, which could be an assault, and of defamation. And the court, and the Yeager court, this court, put those aside and looked at the general nature of the focus of the facts in Yeager and declared it to be an intentional infliction of emotional distress case. And that's what I urge this court in affirming the Court of Appeals decision, that this is not a assault and battery case. This is an intentional infliction of emotional distress case. I'd like to point out that that Mr. Marsall in his brief ignored many of the facts of the case. He only cites the two different acts of conduct or incidents. But as I went through the record and put in my brief, many other things happened also that I would construe, and certainly the lower court, the Court of Appeals, found enough to overcome summary judgment that they constituted things of outrageous nature, causing serious emotional distress. In other words, meeting the elements of the tort of an intentional infliction of emotional distress. The Court of Appeals, and I urge this court to look at the totality of all the conduct and not just focus or dissect the case and look at one particular incident. There's many other incidents, as I go through my statement of facts in my brief, that must be considered in weighing this case. The Court of Appeals explicitly said toward the end of its decision that it bases its decision not only on the incident involving the nurse O'Neill, but also these other incidents that Mr. Marsall touched on in his oral argument a few minutes ago, but that I go in much detail that Mr. Marsall did not talk about at all in his brief to this court. And when you look at the totality of the situation, you will conclude that this is not an assault and battery case. This is an intentional infliction of emotional distress case. And the Court of Appeals was correct in denying summary judgment. This is a case that should go to the jury. If you want to focus specifically on the conduct, the one particular incident that Mr. Marsall focuses on, the incident involving Nurse O'Neill, there were acts other than physical contact. There were statements she made that be construed as very outrageous toward the appellant. I will not state them here, unless the court wishes me, but they're certainly in my brief. And those add to the fact that this is more than just a physical assault. In fact, the focus is not a physical assault case at all. And another precedent that this court can look at in guiding its decision is one of its other decisions, the Kranz case, Porter Paint case, where it was essentially a hostile work environment case in the workplace involving sexual harassment, and that could be analogous to this situation. It is analogous to this situation. And this court upheld the finding that it was not only an assault and battery case and several other intentional torts, but it was also the intentional tort of intentional infliction of emotional distress.
Mr. Sobiecki, it sounds like you're suggesting that in looking at what type of claim it is for purposes of the statute of limitations and to determine whether it's outrageous and extreme conduct, that you must put the claim in context and you must look at the course of conduct, if you will. Rather than the simple act that's involved.
Justice Landeser, I would agree with what you just said, and I believe the Court of Appeals did that. Possibly they could have been more articulate at times, but if you read strictly what they said in their decision, toward the end of the opinion, after they discussed the O'Neill incident, they also talked about the other incidents that happened to the appellee in this case, and the Court of Appeals explicitly said that these other things add to the fact that this is an intentional infliction of emotional distress case.
Doesn't this in a way add to the holding in Doe, though?
Doe versus First Methodist
Church.
Justice Langer, Doe is very consistent. I have no problem with the holding in Doe at all, as I stated. In Doe, it involved strictly physical conduct. Unfortunately, as Mr. Massal stated, sexual assault on a minor. The situation here is much more. First of all, this case doesn't involve anything to do with sexual assault on a minor. But the conduct in this case happened over a period of time, but involves mainly not physical contact. That's why this is not an assault and battery case. This is an intentional infliction of emotional distress case. I agree. In making a finding in this case, you do not look at the complaint, the pleadings, or how the lawyer pled it. You look at the general nature of the case, as this court said. And you apply that same standard to this case, looking at all the facts of the case and not just one or two isolated incidents, and it can be reasonably concluded that the Court of Appeals' decision was correct and this is an intentional infliction of emotional distress case. Also, Your Honors, going back a moment to the Yeager case, the 1983 case that this court recognized initially for the tort of intentional infliction of emotional distress, it referenced the restatement of tort second. And that restatement of tort second talks about that an intentional infliction of emotional distress case, you can have bodily harm too, physical harm, not just mental harm, and it's all recoverable in an intentional infliction of emotional distress type case.
Counsel, the dissenting opinion in the 11th District states, the majority establishes precedent whereby any claim of harmful or offensive physical contact could be pursued as a claim for infliction of emotional distress since any sexual assault is humiliating to the victim. Would you disagree or agree with that statement?
I disagree with that statement, Justice O'Connor, and the reason I disagree with that statement is because I support the holding, and the 11th District Court of Appeals, the two judges in the majority, support the Doe case. And in Doe, although I suppose the attorneys in that case could have said this is an intentional, and they did, I believe, say this was an intentional infliction of emotional distress case, this court rightfully held that when you look at the general nature of the case, it's clearly a physical assault case. Clearly, that's not the case in Barry Tenney's case, in this case, it is not clearly a physical assault case. It is clearly, when you look at everything, including even dissecting the two incidents that referenced by appellants, this is clearly, looking at the general nature of the case, a intentional infliction of emotional distress, not physical contact, not an assault and battery case. And in my brief, I went through the different cases that analyze what's an assault and battery case, what's an intentional infliction of emotional distress case. I'm not urging this court to overturn any of its prior precedents. Your prior precedents, Your Honor, support Barry Tenney's claims in this case that this in reality, on a fact-intensive basis, when you look at the facts, construed, of course, on a motion for summary judgment in a light most favorable to the appellant, the non-moving party, is an intentional infliction of emotional distress case.
Mr. Sobiecki, if this had been styled as a sexual harassment claim, what would the statute have been, the statute of limitations?
Well, there's really no claim as such under Ohio law for sexual harassment unless you look at it under the discrimination law forbidding hostile work environment. Mm-hmm. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that's a 2-year statute. No, Your Honor, I apologize. If I recall, that's a 6-year statute of limitations. Your employment discrimination claims under Ohio law, it's a 6-year statute of limitations, not a 2-year statute of limitations. So if you call it a sexual harassment hostile work environment case, it would come under the 6-year statute of limitations that Ohio law provides for employment discrimination claims. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Sobiecki. Mr. Merosol, you have saved 6 minutes of your time.
And I thought I would use those 6 minutes answering some of the questions that popped up a few minutes ago. Justice Lanziger asked a question about sexual harassment. There was a sexual harassment claim of sorts in the initial complaint filed in this case. That was dismissed by the trial court, and the dismissal was affirmed by the Court of Appeals before this case. Then it was remanded. All that remained in the case was the claim for intentional infliction of serious emotional distress. So that's the only claim at issue in this case. Justice O'Donnell, you had asked me a question that I somewhat answered, but let me turn back to the opinion here in terms of what was the incident involving Diane Lissy and the falling glass? Was it the fact that it fell or the fact that she made the comment afterward? On page 19 of the opinion, what they state is General Electric stood by when Tenney was struck by glass in the incident involving Lissy and Havoc, who was the coworker she was with. So from that's where I draw the conclusion that the Court of Appeals was referring to the striking of glass rather than the comment. It sounds, based on what we're hearing, that Mr. Sobiecki and I are in agreement on a lot of points here, but let me just dive then to the Court of Appeals. And I think it really, even based on the standard they're urging, demonstrates that the decision here was incorrect. What the court does on page 19 of its opinion, first of all, let's talk about Joanne O'Neill. It isolates this sexual assault by her as the incident is the one that makes GE liable. I believe it's on page 12 of the opinion. They make that clear. All this stuff does not establish a claim for intentional infliction of emotional distress. But let's turn to this incident. That's the assault. That's the one that does it for. So clearly that is pristine. That is clear. And as to GE, it's equally clear. On page 19 of the opinion, they repeat the Joanne O'Neill. They refer to the striking of glass by Diane Lissy. And everything else they list is stuff that they've already concluded would not establish this claim. There was graffiti on the wall. Sometimes it was painted in a day. Sometimes it lasted months before the plant maintenance person painted it over. Some people made pig noises. They were told to cut it. They did it on a few occasions. They were told to cut it out, and they did. Now, these are certainly things that may be rude. They may be things that are inappropriate, but they are not intentional infliction of serious emotional distress. And since the essence of this case is an assault, the 1-year statute of limitations should apply. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Merceau. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye.